Welcome back to Integrative Lyme Solutions with Dr. Karlfeldt. I am so excited about the show that we have ahead of us. We have some phenomenal information that could save lives. I am Dr. Michael Karlfeldt, and with me I have my co-host,
Tanya Hobo.
You're going to need to tune in to what's going on today. The information is jam-packed, so don't step away.
So excited. Let's go ahead and get this started. Welcome to Integrative Lyme Solutions with Dr. Karlfeldt. And today we're joined by Cheryl. Thank you so much for joining us and your willingness to share your story with us. We need your guys' stories and your voices to be heard so people can get better faster and not struggle like so many of us did for decades on end, which I think you kind of did that a little bit. So we're excited to have you and hear your journey.
Well, I'm really happy to be here. I'm really excited to share my story with a broader audience of other people who are trying to figure out answers.
Yeah.
I've certainly went through a lot in coming to the answers that worked for me.
Great. Yeah. And that's a key is that there's so many, there's not just one solution for everybody. And so we want to make sure that our listeners are exposed to what is available and see what it is that they resonate with. And if that doesn't work, then there are plenty of other directions they can go. And choices are always better when you deal with something as complex as Lyme.
Absolutely.
So tell me a little bit about your story. I mean, you're an outdoorsy person. And obviously, Lyme exists outside.
It certainly did for me. I want to call myself lucky, but in hindsight, I was able to track when I actually had Lyme disease. I was 18 doing an outward bound course in the mountains of North Carolina and came home with this lovely weird rash on my leg that I now know was an asymmetrical bull's eye rash. And I had flu-like symptoms, diarrhea, nausea, brain fog. But my mother took me to the doctor dutifully, as parents do. And they're like, we don't know. They gave me, I'm going to pronounce it wrong, Lomatil? But something to stop the diarrhea and some kind of cream for the rash. They're like, we don't know what this is. Maybe if I'd been in New York State, nobody had even heard of Lyme disease. It absolutely wasn't diagnosed, wasn't on anybody's radar screen. And after about 6 months with those symptoms, it went into remission. And I just figured whatever it was gone. And it didn't show up again until I was in a car accident and got injured in my late 20s. And it affected my neck and some nerves. And I identify that as a Lyme relapse. And I worked then after trying regular doctors and medical testing, somebody that was holistic and supported my adrenal system and got my diet in line. And I was able to go back into remission just by getting healthier and by virtue of how strong I was. It wasn't until later in life, after a period of intense stress, I was working, towards getting my full professor promotion. I had a daughter really struggling with some self-harming behaviors and active addiction, was going through a divorce. It was like a lot for a couple of years. And I now know too that, and even though I was okay and functioned through that, it was after that, in the letdown of when things got better, that I had a fairly minor injury. And then over the summer, I was doing physical therapy and I didn't know how bad things were. I was 52 years old at the time. I went back in August to teach and I couldn't teach a class. And that same year I won the teaching award for my area of teaching in Parks and Recreation as like the teacher of the year. And I was so sick, I couldn't travel to the conference to even get the award. I don't want to again call myself lucky, but it was so clear to me that I didn't know what was wrong with me. I didn't know I had Lyme disease, but I couldn't work. And I was lucky to be, I was working, for a university in North Carolina with the state system. So they had things in place, like, I went on a 1-year temporary disability to try to figure, well, first it was 12 weeks family medical leave act, and then it was, well, I'm not better now, but I well, they'll find out what's wrong with me. I'll get better. I'll get back to work. And then 1 year was two, and 2 years was three. And they said, well, you know, we'd like you to leave so we can hire somebody else to take your slot. And that was just such a shock. Wow. And I still didn't know I had Lyme disease. That I was talking with Tanya before the before we started. My initial diagnosis and what I went with for 3 years was atypical fibromyalgia, and atypical. Sorry about this squeak there. Stop it, baby. atypical because my brain fog was so bad that my cognitive functioning was impaired that I couldn't teach anymore. And for a long time, I thought it affected my intelligence, but that actually wasn't true. It was just my inability to put ideas together in the way that was required by the work that I did.
Wow. So anyway, I want to back up to like literally your first couple of sentences. So I've been in the Lyme community for many, many years, and I've heard many stories. Dr. Carl Felt and I have done well over 100 episodes, and I have never heard anybody say, I had a bullseye rash that, and I didn't know what it meant. Except me, me. That was always my thing, was I got the bullseye rash, but I had no idea what it meant. So literally you are the first person, Cheryl. I don't know why that just kind of really triggered in my brain when you said that. You're the only other person I've ever heard that from. So I kind of don't feel so bad now, right? Because I always say, if I don't teach anybody anything, let me teach them what a bullseye rash means, right? So
well, bullseye doesn't have to look like a bullseye.
There's a lot of
irregular patterns, and mine was an irregular pattern, and it was on a leg. It wasn't on the side of my body. They thought it was ringworm. I mean,
oh wow. Yeah. No, mine was definitely a bullseye rash, but like I said, I had no idea what it meant. If I did, I mean, I could have saved 13 years of my life, more than likely, right? And like you said, we were the lucky ones that actually got it, but unfortunately, we didn't know what it meant. So we weren't so lucky after all, because most people don't get it. Anyways, I had to back way up and say that, because I, like I said, you're the only person I've talked to that didn't know what it meant. So,
and it is interesting. I mean, you had your car accident, and frequently what happens is wherever the weakness is or wherever the trauma is, you know, there, you know, the pathogens tend to go. So mm-hmm. you will then kind of think, well, it's just because of this trauma, but then the trauma doesn't heal the way that it should. And that tends to be for a reason. And that's when you start to kind of look at things beyond just the car accident or beyond, you know, what, you know, the direct mechanical injury that's taken place. And so that, and it was amazing. So you had the car accident in your late 20s.
Late 20s. And the symptoms then were back to the chronic diarrhea. What had happened when I initially got Lyme at age 18. And so in my late 20s, that returned. So the Western medical system ran me through, you know, I had the colonoscopies, the endoscopies, the barium enemas, and they, you know, were looking for some reason and they couldn't find anything. And when they, after all this testing, and I was in my doctoral program at the time, it was super stressful. And they said, well, we don't know what's wrong with you. It's just stress. And I yelled. I'm not a yeller very often, but I yelled at the doctor. I said, the only thing stressing me out is you can't tell me what's wrong with me. I was so upset.
Well, that is stressful.
It was. Yeah. It was. Yeah. Just by happenstance, I talked to some. I was willing to try what I'm going to call affectionately woo-woo. You know, it was a chiropractor who used naturopathic methods, and she knew something they didn't. Was able to bring my body back into balance, even not knowing it was Lyme.
And what kind of, was it just chiropractic that was woo-woo?
It was chiropractic, but with, she did muscle testing.
Mm-hmm. Very so, woo-woo, yeah.
To identify food sensitivities. So she took a lot of, you know, foods out of my diet, really common things, you know, dairy, caffeine, sugar, wheat. And I was so sick. I did everything she said to the letter. majorly changed my diet. And I think a really big thing, I know she put me on adrenal support, and I'm still, even today, on endocrine support. And I think bringing the endocrine system back up into function, and there was something, she gave me some, I wasn't producing enough stomach acid. So she gave me, so she was able to identify things to give me through this applied kinesiology work in a way less expensive fashion than somebody ordering a whole bunch of blood tests. And I believe with that kind of work, like applied kinesiology and energy work, I think you can find people that aren't gifted in it that sell it, but there are people that are truly gifted. And I do Reiki now. I go every 2 weeks for a Reiki session. And this person is talented. I had tried it earlier and really helped, but I think it's the, whether there's a match between the practitioner or whether how skilled they are at what they do.
Right. So you're voodoo, whatever. I call them voodoo. Okay. Dr. K is my voodoo doctor. And I'll tell you what, after learning everything that this muscle testing stuff entailed, I trust muscle testing like more than I trust anything else. And I tell people that.
It was wonderful. I trusted her muscle testing. I do it on myself.
Yes. No, I'm glad you brought that up.
I don't trust myself as much as I trusted her, but she was very, very good about it, and it worked.
And the other nice thing about muscle testing is, like you said, it's so much cheaper than, you know, going to the actual lab that can test for us, which is Igenics. It's so much cheaper, but the one thing I really appreciated about it was every time I went in to see Dr. K for a follow-up, he would muscle test me again. So it was like having a progress report in between your report cards, right? And so it was like, okay, you know, no, this isn't working, or let's do this, or this is so much better. Like, it really gave me a sense of, okay, like I've got this, you know, we're making some changes in my body. And so I'm telling you, I absolutely love the voodoo doctor.
Well, thank you.
In the category of voodoo, what I'm doing with the Reiki now, it's a trauma specialist, because I'm doing work in childhood and generational trauma. And when I first started seeing her, I think I was already in remission at that point, that she identified that my body was stuck in fight or flight, that was still turned on. And after she made a recommendation for a treatment plan, and after about maybe 8 or 10 treatments, that calmed down and was able to shut off again. And I think that's huge. I'm 64 years old. So I think if a person is bearing a burden of, I'm an adult child of an alcoholic and that kind of dysfunctional family setting, and I think that trauma that maybe didn't affect me physiologically younger, it seems to get worse and worse, the effect of that stress on the body over time as one ages. So I think that's why we see illnesses like MS and fibromyalgia and Lyme disease popping out. Just not exclusively as people get older, but there's definitely a trend there, especially for women.
I agree. And we talk a lot about that on the show, about how the emotional trauma, whether it, you know, was recently or from your childhood that maybe you don't even remember.
Exactly.
We really think it plays a role in us being sick and us getting better as well.
Well, you're going to hear more about that as we do this interview.
Yeah. I love it. Love it. Yes. So first kind of the muscle testing component, and what's fascinating with that is that, you know, when an individual's dealing with a health issue or has a problem, it becomes first an electrical event, you know, before it becomes a biochemical event, you know, which means that the autonomic nervous system, you know, which you can then measure through, you know, things like muscle testing, is going to respond before you'll be able to see it in the blood.
So absolutely.
So that
makes sense.
Yeah, so that way you can then kind of monitor things, you know, way before it starts to show up elsewhere. And also you can then, obviously, it becomes a very preventative mechanism as well. And the beauty with it is, so as you're doing that process, you're able then to see the priority as well, you know, because obviously there can be a gazillion things that are taking place. You know, let's say you got mold, you got Epstein-Barr, you got, you know, Borrelia, you got Bartonella, you got, you know, all these, you know, mercury, you got food sensitivities, you know, but you can't tackle all of that at once, because each time you tackle something, that's going to use up energy to be able to deal with that. And so that way, you know, through this mechanism, you're then able to see what is the priority, which one do I need to address first, and then allowing the intelligence of the body to guide you through that process. And then can I see, you know, let's say, you know, it is Bartonella that, you know, we need to work on first. Then you can then kind of match the frequency of, you know, because Bartonella will have a certain frequency in your body. You can match that opposing frequency of a natural agent and be able to kind of neutralize, you know, the frequency of Bartonella so the body can deal with that. So it's a really powerful technique. And people wonder, well, you know, how come my thyroid is showing up when you're muscle testing? My labs are perfectly fine. Well, it's because, you know, the body's doing everything it can to make sure that the labs are looking okay. Doesn't mean that the thyroid is not struggling and trying to do everything it can to produce the hormones to look fine in the blood, but it's still struggling. Yeah. So, yeah, I love it. I've been, you know, hundreds of thousands of, you know, times that I've muscle tested people and love it.
Well, I'm telling people, if you have somebody that knows how to do muscle testing, believe them. Like, this is real. And I really like what you're saying, that as we catch these things earlier and we can counteract them earlier, they don't have to get into the severe symptoms like what I eventually had to face, the symptoms and crippling disability. I'm actually getting better now than I've been. I'm healthier now than I've been for 12 years.
And when you're dealing with health issues, you know, you kind of look at all of these things, they fill up your bucket, you know, and that bucket, when it starts to kind of flow over, then you're symptomatic. So everything that you're doing, yeah, you know, you're dressing your food sensitivities, well, that's going to impact how the Lyme is being expressed, because you're reducing an additional stressor, you're reducing inflammation, and then your immune system is then going to be able to allocate more resources towards, you know, dealing with the Lyme versus a section of it having to deal with, you know, the food sensitivity. So you're then kind of, as you're emptying that bucket of stressors, you're being able to allocate more and more resources to the Lyme or whatever infection is that you're dealing with.
My ultimate conclusion after my whole experience is exactly what you're saying. I mean, I did long-term antibiotic treatment. I have a really good LLND. She's an endocrinologist, so she's like super scientific, and she brings in the naturopathy as well. But we did the ISDA protocol. And I'm going to back up and talk. It was so hard for me to get diagnosed, having had Lyme for so many years. I did the ISDA test, and it still, I mean, it turned up a few bands, and she wasn't even sure. I'd had several tests done by the time I saw her. She's like, I'm not sure if you had Lyme, but what she did is she gave me antibiotics to see if I had a Herx reaction, and I did. And she's like, good, that's confirmed you have it. And she was, you know, just willing to go with that and treat it, because I had seen a previous LLMD and he wasn't willing to treat me. He's like, no, the treatment's too risky, I'm not sure you have it. Like, that's so helpful. But ultimately, after, and I could go into, and I probably will go into more of the things I tried that helped but didn't ultimately help in the long run. They might ease things off, but then the symptoms came back or went in another direction. So it's removing the stressors on my system and getting my body and keeping my body as healthy as it can possibly be. And that's where I think the treatment gets so individualized. What are the stressors for me are probably different than some of the stressors for you or for other people. And it's identifying those stressors and keeping myself as well as I can, because I or what my doctor has told me with my Lyme in remission, she still has me take a couple drops of cat's claw every day. She's like, you still need to stay on this to keep it where it needs to be. So it's, you know, it's a real disease. It's really in my body, but my body's strong enough in its healthy state to live with this. So that really was the key. How do I remove all these stressors, not giving it antibiotics, which at the end of a year and a half, I'm like, I can't take anymore. It's killing me. It's gonna kill me before it kills the Lyme, is what I felt like.
So when did you kind of aggressively go after that? Was it in your course when you were 52 or when?
No, I didn't. I did. I had a diagnosis of atypical fibromyalgia, and I pursued all the avenues to heal and improve from fibromyalgia for a couple of years. The rheumatologist that diagnosed me with that.
And what did that look like?
I didn't have Lyme, and I believed her. Like, I believed my initial doctors. That then they ran, I can't even remember, what's the name of the initial blood test they give people in
for fibro?
The first, there's a screening blood test that they give people when they're first infected.
Western blot?
No, it was even the Western blot. There's something even more fundamental than that. They did the test. Oh, you don't have it. You're not even, you know. And it turned out later that was actually ambivalent, those results. But I just believed the doctors, what they were telling me. And a Western blot run by LabCorp didn't show anything.
You have the ELISA as well. Was that the one? Or you have sometimes?
It was the ELISA test.
Okay.
It was the initial one. When I had a doctor rerun it, and he was like, no, you don't have Lyme, the ELISA's negative. And I just believed it because I had been with this general practitioner for 15 years and I trusted him. And I am a much more skeptical medical consumer after going through Lyme diagnosis and treatment than I was reasonably skeptical before, I would have thought, but I just was hungry for answers. And I'm like, okay, check that one off. It's not Lyme. And I didn't go back to it till 3 years later. Somebody in a support group with the fibromyalgia, and I described what was happening with me. And she said, I think you really need to go back and look at Lyme again. And I started doing more online research and said, okay, I see that. So it was age 55 when I finally found this Lyme literate doctor who would take me and acknowledge that I had Lyme. And her initial treatment, if the patient was willing to do it, was ISDA, was the ISDA antibiotic protocols. And she was very good at it. I mean, it was all the rotation of the antibiotics, and had a horrible reaction to rifampin. And it was at the end of that year and a half, that was right when the Dapsone protocol was coming out. And I think it was new, and she may have overprescribed it a little bit, but it just like laid me out. And I said, that's it. I'm just not going to do anymore. And to her credit, she's like, okay. And she never pushed the antibiotics or brought them up again. But I'll talk the other things I did have a TruRife machine, one of the frequency generators. I liked that. I did a lot of detoxing with it. I did all the Lyme protocols. I followed all the instructions, and I worked with it for a couple of years, and I think it helped, but it wasn't a cure. I did not do the hyperthermia treatments, but I had friends that had more money than I did, and they did the hyperthermia and the stem cell protocols. Same thing, they were better for a short period of time, and then they went back. I never did ozone therapy. I've since learned more about that. I think that's something I would have tried had somebody suggested it. It would have been a lot better than the antibiotics in my mind, but for some reason it never hit the radar screen.
Yeah, I love ozone.
I'm trying to think what, I mean, aside from all the gazillion herbs and supplements and dietary things that are recommended. And I still take some of those now for support. I mean, probiotics have been huge.
Especially after the antibiotic, I bet.
Yeah. And I still take them like every day. I take a high quality probiotic. It's something my doctor recommends. I tried lots of things within my price range. It would still be expensive for somebody. I had at least enough money to do that, but it's still, I don't know what I'm even talking about. $100,000, what I spent on all those things, the doctor's visits, the testing, the trip to Arizona, because my husband wanted me to get a second opinion. I don't know if you really have Lyme and if we should really be spending all this money and being questioned.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, I mean, with all these gazillion things, I mean, what do you feel worked? I mean, what do you feel?
So then let's get to the answer. Yeah. I haven't gotten to that yet.
Yeah.
part of what was the real thing that worked for me was, I want to say trauma work, but after my doctor had worked with me for, I mean, we're talking 8 years in, and she is also into, I worked with a shaman. She told me a couple of times, I think you need a shaman. And I just didn't even hear it. And then a friend of mine had gone to school and she was a trauma therapist and she did ketamine therapy. And she found that that treatment was improving her Lyme. And there were a group of us, I was living in Utah at the time, and there were five of us that had Lyme disease. And she's like, we're gonna grow these medicinal mushrooms. And we formed a group, we called ourselves the Healing Community. And we did work some with shamans and then the others, we held space for each other. I'm not necessarily recommending a person go off on their own. There's therapists and therapeutic settings and they're getting more and more common these days, but that, I had therapists, nobody suggested that the trauma from growing up in a home with alcoholism, but generations of alcoholism and how my parents were affected by their own trauma and how that affected their ability to parent me and how that formed a belief system that made relationships problematic and the stressors in those relationships. And so just this stuff started to come out working. The plant medicines brought in a lot of one of my therapists would call it self energy or the energy of the true self, starting to bring that back forward. The last 2 years before I started down this path, I went into a very severe depression and I developed symptoms of PTSD. And the dog that was playing with his ball earlier, he's a psychiatric support dog. So he's been great through all of this. And but I had no idea that this even existed in the plant medicine. Well, I didn't initially did ketamine therapy with a therapist, but it's the plant medicines that I feel have wisdom in them. And on a scientific note, I have my Lyme doctor test my CRP. So approximately a year ago, it was 3.6, and this year it was 1.5. And I think that drop is entirely due to the things I was talking about, like with the Reiki specialist helping me turn off that fight or flight response that was activated by my trauma responses that are in my, that were and are, and I'm still working with them, in my subconscious brain, keeping my body, doesn't think I'm safe. My body doesn't think I'm safe because of these subconscious messages. And I had no idea until I was introduced to books like The Body Keeps the Score. And and I now know, like, I really believe fibromyalgia, it's a story written in my body. I'm still working with gaining access to my feelings because I've been so disconnected from my body. And I'm active in the Adult Children of Alcoholics program, but I'm very active in that. And I'm also in a group called Psychedelics in Recovery, which is an international program. Most of the meetings are on Zoom, but I've started a face-to-face meeting here in Austin. And almost everyone in there is working on trauma. They're in 12-step recovery and other programs, but then they're using psychedelics as an adjunct to help them act with appropriate set and setting. And sometimes I don't need to hire a facilitator anymore unless I'm looking for something really specific. I can kind of, so it's a gray market, like call it legal, not exactly legal in many places, but there's a gray market there. And so it's not inaccessible.
Yeah, dear friend of mine, Dr. Maya Chitreet, you know, she just came out with a book about, you know, psychedelic and how to use them and what kind of setting and the impact and you know, so it's amazing what, when done appropriately in the right setting with the right guidance, the benefit that can have for people to kind of shift their stress response into, you know, then understanding more where it's coming from and how to process it.
And when you say shift the stress response, what I'm learning how to do is to know when a trigger comes up. And the medicine, when I call it the medicine, I'm talking about typically psilocybin mushrooms is the main thing I use. I've learned to stop running from what's in my body, stop disconnecting from it. I was completely disconnected. I didn't want to be there. It hurt. and to be in my body, see what I'm feeling, see what, but to follow that trigger and learn how to work with that trigger in that moment with that self energy to start rewriting those subconscious messages. For example, as I took on as a child, I believe there was something wrong with me. There was nothing wrong with me. And I want to tell those young parts, guess what? There's actually nothing wrong with you. And it's, they're like, what?
Yeah, it was pretty heroic for you to go through that kind of a, you know, childhood.
I was desperate. I was I slipped in after the initial PTSD response. I slipped into a really severe depression with suicidal ideation. And honestly, if I hadn't had I got the service dog, and he like kept me alive. Like I was willing to stay alive for him, but I didn't. The first treatment I sought was ketamine therapy, and I had just like lived with it for over a year. There were weeks I barely got out of bed except to walk the dog and occasionally get something to eat. I lost a lot of weight. I was just paralyzed, and I couldn't separate at that point what was Lyme symptoms, I was just sick, and I started to believe I couldn't get better. Like I was getting sicker and sicker, and it felt like the Lyme. And I was just, I felt like I had tried everything I could possibly try. And when my friend contacted me and said, well, I think you should do this, I'm like, I'm willing to try anything. You say it's working. I think you're smart. I'm going to do it. Plus it wasn't horrifically expensive.
Yeah. So I think that, and we talk a lot about this, and I'm glad that we do, because there's so much trauma in our body that we may not be aware of. And I really think in order to completely heal yourself, you've got to acknowledge that trauma and heal that trauma. And so many people out there that are dealing with Lyme, they just think we're just talking out of our woohoo. I don't know. they don't believe it. They think that they have to, you know, ingest something or something like that in order to get better. And I'm not saying that, you know, these protocols that you do with, you know, supplements and stuff like that are not healing you. They are. But in order to truly get to the bottom of what is going on, you've got to heal that emotional part of your body as part of your journey. You just do.
For me, that was the key, because of the kind of background I had, because of that I was just completely unaware. But the research is coming out. There's so much more documentation now than there was even 5 years ago. I'm actually currently reading The Myth of Normal by Gabor Mate. And he just comes right out and he says, we have our true self. And then we have our, if you have trauma, you have that attachment trauma, or I call it an abandonment trauma, however you want to word it. And the coping skills that I put into place, hypervigilance on other people and what they wanted from me, and being, I was overly responsible and became what other people, I just thought it was important to be what other people wanted and needed. And I didn't know how to look to myself. So those behaviors opposed to my true self, and it's my true self, it's my soul that wants to be expressed. And like he says, they're like at odds with each other, and you're gonna have that battle going on until you start healing. And his the word he uses is attachment trauma, and it's a big issue. We have a socially toxic culture, especially in the United States, where you know both many families are, you know, both parents are working. I was a full-time working mother of two children, and it's just not fair to anybody. And if I knew then what I know now about the importance of, you know, bonding and spending all that, I had no idea what infants needed, because it wasn't how I was parented, because my mother had no idea either, and neither did her mother, and on and on. And parents can't give what they don't have.
Yeah.
And so When I say socially toxic culture, I honestly can't imagine that there's anybody who was raised in the United States of America, unless you're in a community that is more, I'm white colonialist American. So culture anybody like me was raised in is probably, you know, perfectionistic and just ends up with some of this, even if your all the parents are doing, not all the parents, but I like to think parents are doing the best they can, but they're bringing their own trauma in. This has been going on for generations.
Yeah. And how can you not, you know, it becomes how you're, because it's based upon survival. I mean, you have a trauma. And so in order to be able to survive, you need to then be able to respond to what it is that's attacking you. And so as you then, you know, have a child, then you want to give that gift to your child. So then genetically, you know, they will then express in a way to be able to protect themselves against whatever that danger is. So the trauma will then kind of epigenetically will travel through generations until you recognize that, you know, I don't need to defend myself against this. You know, I don't need this trauma is not related to me anymore. You know,
and it's outmoded, it's outdated. We don't need this anymore. And so much good work in epigenetics. And I don't know the time frame, but as I've become aware of it in the last 5 years, you know, the documentation of how epigenetics carries and how far back it goes. I've actually, and I told you it could get weird. I took a class on healing family lineage, healing my own lineage trauma, and it gets real woo-woo. But it's something, and there's like practitioners I can contact. I've only worked so far with my father's line, and I kind of put it on hold while I worked on my own healing. But I think it's really neat because I get, and this is a sense from the plant medicine, so this is just my experience, about 80% of the burden I carry in trauma, I think, is generational, like brought to me. It's not mine. And then maybe 20% of it is stuff I've generated in this lifetime in my own personal patterns. So it's a very broad healing. And I also broadly believe that that as humans, we're in a place where we're evolving. And I think we're evolving very rapidly. And there's a lot of pressure on us at this time. I would call our culture late stage patriarchal capitalism. There's a lot of madness going on. Just the inequities and how people are being treated. I'm very privileged. I have lots of privilege in my life, but that's not true of a whole lot of people, and they're really struggling out there. And I think that pressure is there to help push us to evolve, that everything that's been a crisis in my life has turned out to have a good outcome. I even think I loved my career. Being a professor is like the best job ever if you like to do that kind of stuff, because I had so much freedom and flexibility. I'm kind of neurodivergent. I have ADHD, and I could work my schedule around my own lifestyle. And so I was just devastated when I had to go on disability. But I kind of now see that this soul journey that I'm on and healing this trauma, and I'm breaking the lineage line. My daughters are both healing as I heal. And I'm like, yeah, we're actually breaking the cycle. And I think that's what I needed to do. And had I not gotten sick,
Just going to say, you know, had you not had Lyme, none of this ever would have even been a topic in your world.
I would still be at East Carolina University, being a full professor, having a good old time, because it was a great job.
Yeah. Fun. But it just, you know, Lyme changes us in so many ways. And this, you know, is not a good, or this is not a bad thing. You know, what came out of you being sick, going through this healing journey that you're going through.
And I didn't even mention one of the worst things that happened. I had a lot of chronic pain. I mentioned the fibromyalgia and of course Lyme, and I started, they gave me initially Vicodin, and then it was, well, and Tramadol, but then it was oxycodone, and I stayed on it. I was on some dosage of it for 12 years, and eventually the doctor was over-prescribing probably. I was taking 60 milligrams of oxycodone a day, and I was very dependent on that, 4 milligrams of Xanax a day. initially when I got sick, I would constantly have meltdowns. I would just break into, when I would try to think about something, my body would melt down in this big puddle of sweat and I would just freeze. I don't even know what was going on there. I was a wreck. And then there was the Ambien to sleep at night. So I was on all three of those medications for 12 years. And those kind of things work until they don't. And I absolutely know at this point that contributed to that depression I was talking about, that kind of medication. And because I know other people that have gotten dependent on it, and they say, yeah, about that 10, 12 year mark, your brain starts to get scrambled and everything falls apart in your life. And I want to tell you, the withdrawal from that, getting off that stuff, it was awful. I would recommend to anybody out there, if your doctor is giving you that, ease yourself off while you can. It seems like the solution until it doesn't. And it was a real pitfall for me.
Yeah, and as you're kind of easing yourself off, I mean, it's like every step that you're taking is a nightmare. You go to cold sweat
and
you
go into the dark.
Yeah.
I tried to get myself off the medications a couple of times. I got very little support from doctors. I said, I want to get off these medications. And they're like, no.
Well, they don't know how. I mean,
they don't know how.
No.
And so I would go research how to do it. And the doctors, well, we can't support that protocol.
Yeah, I mean, they're fantastic at adding things, but then they don't know the interaction between, you know, like you're on three medications. There's been no study what these three medications do, how they interact, the safety protocol of those three medications. And then they're not skilled at pulling you off safely because they just don't know. They know how to add, but they really don't know how to pull you off.
Benzos, especially Xanax, because it's so short acting, a nightmare.
Yeah. And so I want to kind of go back a little bit to kind of the family, kind of the generational. I mean, you have Hellinger's work, you know, it's a family constellation work that's really powerful, and where you actually look at the structure of the family and you go back, you know, many, many lineages and you have that flow of the generation of energy from, you know, father to son, you know, to son, et cetera. And then you can then see when that flow is broken, when you have some traumatic event and that can then, so you need to kind of heal where that breakage is. But then also you have just the relationship, you know, between grandfather, father, and kind of building that picture. And you can do that through muscle testing and see, you know, what are the different individuals within that family structure that play a role in what your symptoms are, you know, what you're dealing with, your symptoms.
Right.
And bring them in. And then
that was brought up in the class I took.
Yeah.
They said, identify if there's a line that's really affecting you today. Mm-hmm. You can identify which one or ones those are and maybe like work with them first.
Yeah, and yeah, it's really fascinating because I've done a number of this, you know, where you then bring in these different individuals that play a role within the structure, and then you have a circle of individuals that mm-hmm. kind of create that protective circle, and then you play out those scenes, those relationship scenes, you know, within that circle, and it really becomes powerful and healing, and it's not always trauma. It's more kind of that connection, that the constellation that you're healing.
And then you bring that community focus back in your life and the support of your broader family community that we've just lost so much touch with in our mobile, separate culture. I mean, I moved away from my parents. I had very little to do with my grandparents, but that doesn't mean just in indigenous cultures, for the thousands of years before we evolved into where we are now, these last few hundred years, life was very different for a lot of people. And we've been asked to go through a lot of changes very quickly, and our genetics aren't necessarily adapted to that. And those techniques you're talking, I'm not familiar with that work, but it's consistent with, I'll go into the this is weird category again. When I was first doing plant medicine, I worked with shamans. I was working with my friend, and what kept coming up was that sense, this is not mine, this is not mine. And I'm like, what is that? And I believe, I'll use the word spirit, like takes me to the resources I need. And I was looking on YouTube and I found a woman in Spain that did work with ancestral trauma healing. She was an energy worker. And I worked with her and she identified some very specific patterns and a story in my mother's line. And I was able to work with some things to help that resolve. At least that's how it felt. That's what happened to me. And that's what brought my attention to wanting to get some more formal training into how to do that kind of work safely. And I'm sure there's many other methods as well, but just to acknowledge that it's there and that it's important, that it's impacting us.
Yes.
And to me also, you know, I believe, you know, God plays these. I mean, you have plants and they have certain frequency, they have certain energy. And when we ingest them or use them, you know, they carry a certain intelligence that brings us back to who we are. And mm-hmm. each plant that has a certain kind of key that they hold, and when we ingest them, we then benefit from that intelligence. So it's over and above just the chemical constituents that's in it. It's also then the energetic quality, you know, how these chemicals, how they're structured and how they resonate or vibrate, and that brings a certain aliveness and certain intelligence into the body to kind of bring us back to who we are and what we're meant to be, and the kind of homeostasis or the natural being of who we are then gets reinforced so that we can then kind of battle whatever it is that we're battling.
I think that's really the bottom line, is coming back to who I am, finding out who I am, coming to who I am. And I wholeheartedly believe that my journey along that path, as I'm coming back to who I am, is what has lowered my inflammation level or whatever other factors and allowed my body to come up and get my Lyme into remission. Just put it back in some kind of homeostasis and I can just live with it. I'm not saying, you know, the disease is absolutely real, but taking antibiotics, using a Rife machine, I mean, these were all good guesses. And they didn't necessarily hurt. I may have reduced the load, but it wasn't enough. It wasn't the key, if you will. I will loosely categorize it as trauma work.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and I absolutely believe that was what worked for you, and I think it's a real thing. Obviously, it is, because that's what's making you better, or that was your.
It wasn't just me. It was
your missing piece. Yeah. So incredible. I love having voodoo, whatever talks. It's just amazing. And this is how we get information out there for, you know, the listeners to just hear all these different facets of Lyme and how to get better and how to heal yourself and what works, you know, like Dr. Kay said earlier, not one thing works for everyone. We definitely know that. But this emotional trauma part of our bodies, like, I think everyone's affected by it.
And it's just a factor to be considered. I listened to a functional medicine doctor on a podcast in the last year, just because I was interested. And one of the things they screen is they ask, you know, what happened? What's going on in your emotional life right now? And he said, if there's a trauma, we address that. And I'm like, well, who knew? I've never had a doctor ask me anything like that. I mean, my doctor got close and at least suggesting a shaman.
Yeah.
And it got me onto the right path. It was a little circuitous and difficult, but I got there. It's not like a one and done. I didn't like travel to Costa Rica and take ayahuasca and be magically changed. It's a whole therapeutic process.
Yeah. And that's also important for people to understand. So just taking like psilocybin or ayahuasca, or that in itself is not going to fix it. Yeah. It is the work around it, and these things are tools. But if you don't do all the other work alongside with it, it doesn't really do much. You know, you're still going to be the same.
they need to be in a therapeutic setting and starting off, you know, working probably with some trained facilitators. And depending on what comes out, you may need the integration is necessary, but you need that the ability to set an appropriate therapeutic intention and to create a safe set and not only a safe, but a safe and therapeutic set and setting to let the medicine speak. I'm not taking mushrooms and going to a concert. It's not like that at all. It's hard, hard work. And I had to set, I did a journey Saturday with a friend of mine, a woman who's doing a lot of similar work. And what came up for me in that journey was an opening of my heart chakra. I could feel my chest expanding, and it was, and the feeling that came in was unconditional love. And I'm like, this is unfamiliar. It was uncomfortable. I knew what it was. And the whole journey was just sit with it. Just be with it. It's uncomfortable right now because you don't even recognize it. You've made love conditional your whole life. You thought it was connected to who you could be or what you could do and or how other people saw you. And that's not what love actually is. And just like, what, I'm like, wow, I had no idea what that even felt like.
Well, no part of healing is, I don't think, ever comfortable. So
good point.
Yeah. No difference in that as well.
Well,
it's not an easy path. Plant medicine is not an easy fix. I think it's not a magic pill. That's the point I want to make. I'm not suggesting that it is.
No, and nothing is. I don't think there's one magic pill.
Well, this has been amazing. We've really there's such important healing aspects, you know, for people to understand and know that it's out there and that these are tools that are extremely powerful and useful, you know, in the right possible way. And so I thank you so much for sharing this. It's been awesome.
Well, I'm happy to tell this story because I think it could benefit a lot of people. I wish I'd heard something like this.
Yeah.
Yes, I absolutely agree.
Out there. Please, everybody, listen to the podcast. Listen to the people that are sharing through these podcasts because there's a lot of experience. It can save you a lot of time and money. And the healing, like you said, none of it's easy. And so going down wrong paths is expensive, painful, difficult, possibly deadly. The suicide rate, I totally get it with Lyme disease. You get hopeless and helpless, and it's extremely difficult. But be courageous. You can do this with the support of the community.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. And then there's benefits too. There have been.
Yes. And I think one last thing that, you know, a lot of people I see get well and they're well for a while and then they're sick again. And I think that that's a big part of it. I mean, I think it's how you treat your body, you know, the foundation of it. But I also think a lot of it is this emotional aspect that they never touched. So good topic today. I love it. Thank you so much for sharing with us.
Information this podcast is for educational purposes only and is not designed to diagnose or treat any disease. I hope this podcast impacted you as it did me. Please subscribe so that you can be notified when new episodes are released. There are some excellent shows coming up that you do not want to miss. If you're enjoying these podcasts, please take a moment to write a review and please don't keep this information to yourself. Share them with your family and friends. You never know what piece of information that will transform their lives. For past episodes and powerful information on how to conquer Lyme, go to integrativelymesolutions.com and an additional powerful resource, limestream.com. For Lyme support and group discussions, join Tanya on Facebook at Lyme Conquerors Mentoring Lyme Warriors. If you'd like to know more about the cutting-edge integrative Lyme therapies my center offers, please visit thecarlfeldcenter.com. Thank you for spending this time with us, and I hope to see you at our next episode of Integrative Lyme Solutions with Dr. Carlfeld.